This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the show. You're listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Tina Camellia. In January last year, a hiker was missing for 7 days in Broga Hill, Semenye. And 2 months later, a couple of international students went missing for a day in the same hill. Fast forward to this year, 2 Singaporeans went missing hiking Gunung Pulai for several days before being found. This happened only a few weeks ago. Safety when hiking is something that many people take for granted while others overprepare. And how many of us can be as resourceful as Bear Grylls when we are lost in the woods? We speak to Chan Yuan Lee from Nomad Adventure, who has been in the business of adventure sports for 25 years. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
All right. So let's go to that case in March. How do people go missing in Broga Hill? It's a pretty straightforward trail. It's really hard to get lost when it's such a well-established trail. But what went wrong, do you think?
Well, obviously, I don't quite know what happened in that situation. But I think it's actually a bit of a misconception that trails which are well-hiked are difficult to get lost on. Because generally what happens is that there are a lot of paths. Because, you know, everyone takes a little shortcut. You know, some people like cut this bit. You know, some people go off. So it's really easy to have lots of little tracks. You know, going off into various directions. And then they may just suddenly end. And because so many people hike on that path, you know, very often people are less prepared because they think, well, it's just a day hike, you know, and I've been on this before. So it's really quite easy to get disorientated. So, never underestimate the jungle.
So what are some of the things that you must take into account when planning for a hiking trip, even if it's for a day trip?
I think the main thing is just yourself and your own condition. Every day is different. You know, some days you're going to do a two-hour hike, and you're well prepared, and then you're done in 1 hour because you're just zooming along the trail. You're, you know, well hydrated. You know, you're fit. And some days you do that same 2 hour hike, and you come back 4 hours later, like, oh my god, that was like the hardest thing I've ever done. And so I think, you know, very often from day to day, you know, your condition, your mental preparedness, your physical situation is different, and very often we forget that. You know, we think of going to the hill as if we're going to the gym, but it's not. You know, and there's a lot of variables, and the biggest variable is ourselves, our bodies and our minds.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the essentials that we should carry with ourselves when we go on a hike?
Well, actually, I think the most essential thing is called common sense. and very often we forget it's not quite so common. You know, so just telling someone that you're going on a hike, where you're going, what time you're leaving, when you should be expected back. You know, just some common sense things. Have, you know, water with you, or what time of the day you're starting out. You know, just generally apply good judgment and common sense. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, that you can have all the gear, but still have no idea, as they say. So the main thing is really that common sense.
Right. And on the flip side, what's over-preparing?
Well, I think, first of all, it's fantastic to see so many people out in the outdoors. It's wonderful to see, you know, you go to Bukit Gasing, you go to Broga Hill, and there's tons of people out there, you know, enjoying an outdoor lifestyle, getting fit, you know, communing with nature. And that's absolutely wonderful to see. And I really hope that incidents like this, you know, people getting lost and all that, don't put people off. Because I think as modern humans, we miss that connection with nature. So I think it's really important, to maintain that desire to go out in the outdoors and challenge ourselves. Overprepared? Well, I guess, I don't know. It's. I don't think anyone's ever been criticized for being overprepared. I think people are criticized when, you know, they have all the gear but no idea. And, you know, going out to the shop and buying the most expensive equipment won't get you common sense. You know, that's, you know, when people are like, oh, look at that person, you know, they've got all this stuff, but they don't know how to use it, or they don't know how to, very simple, basic things they're not following. So I don't think anyone's been criticized for being overprepared. You know, some people are criticized for thinking that gear and equipment is a good substitute for common sense and experience.
And speaking of expensive gears, I was just wondering about hiking poles. That can be quite expensive. Is that really necessary for a hike?
Well, they're nice. I have some. You know, I use them sometimes.
But you do pretty extreme outdoor stuff. So
yeah, it can help. It's not a necessity. You know, I think if it was a necessity, you'd see, you know, people in Africa and all of that, you know, with hiking poles. But it's not something that is. It's a fairly new invention. It's very good for city folk who, you know, may not be so used to uneven terrain, and you know, they it helps them get a bit of balance. Also helps you, I suppose. You know, I think that the theory is that you've got upper body workout as well as working up your legs. So that's the theory.
And what about the appropriate attire for hiking?
In Malaysia, we have very hot and humid weather. You know, I think something that's quick dry definitely makes a big difference. When I first studied first aid, I thought, wow, why am I studying hypothermia? I live in Malaysia. You know, who's ever going to get hypothermia? But honestly speaking, I have seen people who have a T-shirt on and it rains and, you know, they're soaked to the skin. And then after the rain, they're shivering. They're hypothermic. And that's because most often it's because they're wearing something like a cotton T-shirt. So, you know, if you're in the outdoors, quick dry is really the way to go. It makes a big difference. It may not make a big difference when everything is fine, but when things go south a little bit, when you're in a slightly more, you know, when conditions get a bit more extreme, it does make a difference then.
And how about footwear?
I'm always so envious when I look at, when I hike with Orang Asli or when I hike with, you know, people who, you know, grew up in the outdoors, you know, either as farmers and all of that. And I just see what they're wearing and they, you know, they're wearing the thinnest shoes and the most basic stuff. And, you know, they're wearing those Adidas Kampung and you know, slipper and, you know, Bata shoe and all of that. And they're like cruising and they're doing really well. Again, I think it's about knowing our limitations, where we are. If you grew up like that, fantastic. By all means, you know, just wear whatever's most comfortable. I remember, in fact, hiking with this Orang Asli lady, and she was barefoot the whole way.
Wow.
And then when she approached her village, then she ducked into the jungle, then she pulled out her slippers. And then she wore her slippers. I said, oh, how come you didn't wear it? So, oh, I don't want to wear out my slippers. So I only wear the slippers near where people can see me. And when people can't see me, I just go barefoot. And that's so amazing. I wish I grew up like that. I wish I had feet that were so, you know, that were used to the terrain like that. Unfortunately, I, you know, grew up in a city, so I have to, you know, have good shoes and you know, I really value my shoes with good support. Mm-hmm. And depending on the terrain, if it's going to be very wet and muddy, then I go for a lighter weight shoe that's faster drying. If I know it's going to be very rocky, then I may need a shoe with more support and ankle support and a bit sturdier shoe. So, you know, my outdoor shoe closet is like Imelda Marcos. You open it, it's like thousands of shoes. So I wish by all, you know, wish with all my heart I could be like one, that Orang Asli lady that showed me how wonderful it was just to go minimal. But yes, I must confess, I am Imelda Marcos of outdoor shoes.
That's very interesting. What are some of the common rookie mistakes that most amateur, even seasoned hikers, make when they go on a hike?
Ooh, most common mistakes. I guess there are quite a few. I think water is always a very big one. You have to have water. You know, I think somehow there's this belief sometimes, you know, some of the old timers, they think, yes, let's ration the water. Let's try not to drink. And then they'll proudly say, I can hike, you know, for 10 hours and only drink half a liter of water, you know. And, well, you know, that's not really so good for your body. So I think definitely the new way of thinking is, you know, we have to keep ourselves hydrated for our health now and for our long-term continued health, you know. So being hydrated, thinking about sources of water as you hike, where are you going to replenish your water? You know, are you going to carry it all? Are you going to take, you know, water purifying tablets to replenish it? There are many options, but always, you know, water is very, very critical. I think the other one also is about having enough nutrition, having enough food. You know, having a banana now and then, you know, lots of little snacks help keep the energy up. Mm-hmm. You know, those really help. And when you're more energetic, you're hydrated, you're thinking clearly, you're making less, you know, theoretically, when you're thinking clearly, you make less mistakes.
Right. Tell me more about your own experience. Do you hike a lot?
I hike a bit, not that much. I hike mainly as a form of training. I did the Eco Challenge races in the early 2000s. I did 4 Eco Challenge races, and those are really, really long expedition races. So they're like 12 days. Your majority of it's hiking. You know, it's a 500-mile long race course. It takes 10 days for you to hike. You've got to navigate, plan your food, you know, plan your how you're going to stay hydrated. Along some of the ways, there may be challenges like mountain biking or a rappel or a section of river where you've got to paddle by raft or by kayak or by native boat. So those were long expedition races. And I think in those 4 years when I was racing very seriously, and we went up to the World Championships and we did the World Championships in Switzerland, those years really helped hone those outdoor skills. Because in that intense environment, it's not just doing the expedition, but doing it competitively in this competitive environment, you know, and so you have to be very efficient.
I have so many questions now. I mean, have you ever gotten yourself in trouble while you're in the outdoors?
Well, you know, I remember this quote, and it's by, I think, Davy Crockett. And he said, well, you know, I never really been lost before, but I have been mighty confused for a day or two. So, you know, I think there is a distinction between being lost and being like, you know, oh my God, I, you know, absolutely need help. You know, where's the safety beacon? I need to press the button. And then like, okay, I don't quite know where I am, but I think I can, you know, I can get myself out of this situation. So there is a line when you can still self-rescue and get yourself out of the situation, and a line when like, okay, folks, this is it. I you know, I can't help myself. I need to get outside help. So I think that's the main distinction between being really seriously in trouble and, you know, and just kind of being a bit confused for either a few hours or maybe even a few days.
And you're speaking with many, many years of experience. But I'm curious to know, where did it begin?
My biggest learnings in the outdoors have been all the times where I have made those mistakes, you know, where I've decided to go on a rock climb and too late in the day, you know, like, yeah, okay, it's 6 p.m. Don't worry, I can finish this rock climb. And then, you know, then you get benighted, right? And you can't come down because you can't see. It's all dark. I've been on the, you know, rock face and like, okay, let's hope for some lightning so I can see, you know, the lightning, you know, there's lightning. Oh, great, I can see the next 10 feet. Then, you know, you walk there. You know, so I've had a lot of experiences, and a lot of my, some ways my skills have been, I've gotten them from making mistakes. So mistakes are not a bad thing, as long as I said that we keep them so that we're not endangering other people. We're not putting other people worrying unnecessarily for us. And obviously, if you have, you know, search party going out for you, then a lot of people are inconveniencing their life to save you. So mistakes are not a bad thing, as long as you can manage them.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to adventure sports expert Chan Yuan Li about hikers' safety. Up next, we uncover what we can do when the worst happens during a hike. BFM 89.9. Welcome back. It's Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Tina Camilla. If you've just joined us today, I'm speaking with adventure sports expert Chan Yuan Li to discuss safety while hiking. Hiking is a popular recreational activity, but it does come with its own risks. Yuan Li, who has been in the business of adventure sports, including whitewater rafting, rock climbing, and adventure racing, is here to help make hiking safer for all. Her qualifications include wilderness first aid, swift water rescue, and technical rope rescue. It's a mouthful.
Yes, it is quite a mouthful.
tell me more about your qualifications. What all of that? What does that mean?
I'm associated with an organization called Rescue 3 International. And Rescue 3 International, it does rope rescue, water rescue, and of course, wilderness first aid. And it teaches mainly to rescue services, like firemen, fire departments, national park employees, all around the world. It's in 50 countries, from Europe to the United States, to South America, Australia, New Zealand. It's all around the world. And Rescue 3 Asia is fairly new, but getting a lot of exposure as well. So the rescue that we do tends to focus on more technical things like rope, you know, where you're like trying to rescue people off cliffs or from rivers and all of that. You know, hiking is, there isn't a particular certification for hiking rescue, but it's kind of in a general sphere of outdoor safety. So Rescue 3 International works with rescue organizations, and it also works with a lot of outdoor professionals like river guides, rock climbing guides, and all of that. So the qualifications, they have two tracks of qualifications. So one for, they call it the James Bond track for all those firemen and all that who can come with, you know, big truck full of equipment, or the MacGyver track, who are tend to be the outdoor guides who, you know, you're out there on the river, you've got a throw bag, few carabiners, a couple of slings. How do you rig a rescue with the equipment that you have? So we teach for both organizations as well. So it's very interesting teaching for both. So and it's very interesting being the meeting point for both. So sometimes on the course, you've got professional rescuers and you've got the outdoor guides, you know, and very different mindset, you know.
Right, that's very interesting. So when you are on a hike, what do you do if you find yourself injured?
There's so many different types of injury. So I think the main thing, I guess, before you even get to that. So while we teach rescue, I say I teach rescue, but actually a lot of my courses that I teach, actually I'm teaching prevention.
Right.
Because once you teach the rescue techniques, most people in the outdoors go like, oh my goodness, it's so difficult to rescue that. You know, if someone has their leg stuck in under a rock in the river, oh my God, it's so complicated. Yep. So don't you think it's a lot easier that you give very thorough safety briefings and make sure no one gets their leg stuck in a rock, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, by teaching people rescue, they have greater awareness of how difficult it is to get yourself out of trouble. So hopefully that raises the awareness that let's think a bit more about prevention. And of course, you know, rescue is what you do when things go wrong. So definitely, you know, we have, as outdoor leaders, as, you know, people in the outdoor community, we also talk a lot about prevention. So I think about getting injured, majority, and when you look at it, I do know from reading of statistics in national parks in the US where they've, you know, at every national park, they've got statistics of evacuations from, you know, rivers, rock climbs, hiking trails and all that. Surprisingly, hiking by far has the most injuries. You know, so what people think of is those high risk activities, you know, where you see people rappelling off cliffs or climbing or, you know, going down the rapids. Those actually have less injuries. And it's almost something like 80% of injuries in national parks tend to be hiking related, you know, sprained ankle, burnt themselves on the stove while camping, you know, those kind of hiking, camping related ones. And well, 10% are actually doing the more extreme activities. And another huge percentage are just from transportation. You know, they cross the road, get knocked down by a car, and that kind of thing. And the reason why hiking, I guess, tends to have a lot more injuries is because more people do it. Hey, you know, I just have a pair of shoes, I got a backpack, and, you know, I bought my 10 ringgit backpack, and, you know, I got my little 5 ringgit poncho. All right, off I go, you know. Whereas people who go rock climbing, you know, they obviously have to have equipment and a lot more gear and all of that stuff. So there's less barriers to entry for hiking. So one is more people are doing it. I think also, I hate to use the negative word, but, you know, more unfit people are drawn to its hiking, you know. Everyone thinks that, hey, everyone can walk, right? So you can walk in the shopping mall, so surely you can walk in the mountain, right? So that's kind of the theory. So a lot of people actually, a lot of the injuries, if you look at the statistics, are health-related. Are people having heart attacks, people having, you know, high blood pressure, having strokes. And those are lifestyle ailments, you know. So they, it's great that people are going outdoors and doing them. But I think, first of all, be fit, you know, and make sure that you are fit. Because if you have a heart attack in the jungle, by the time you get help, it will definitely be a life-threatening thing. If you have a heart attack in a shopping mall, people can evacuate you. You can get to the hospital really, really quickly. So I think the first thing that's most important is, you know, be healthy and be healthy to do these. You know, do know that you're putting yourself in an environment where it's not easy to get help.
And a lot of the times when people do find themselves in a tough situation, it's not always something they plan. You know, it could be the weather changing drastically and you're not prepared for the rain, for example. You were mentioning a little bit about hypothermia. How common is that when people get lost in the jungle, for example, or get caught in the rain? How fast is the onset of hypothermia?
I think there's a lot of different components. So, mm-hmm. You know, a lot, like, have they eaten? What activities were they, you know, what's the level of exhaustion? It's not that common. You know, obviously, if someone is more exhausted, and obviously someone is lost for multiple days, then you can definitely expect them to be hypothermic because they're hungry, they haven't eaten for a few days, they've been sleeping out. It's not that common, but there's so many different, there are a lot of different components, you know. How thin is that person? You know, what kind of clothes do they have? Were they doing a water activity or could they manage to actually be in a shelter?
What should hikers do should they get lost in the jungle?
Wow.
Should they stay or should they go find a way out? There's always that point where you have to decide, right? Do I stay put and wait for help or do I try to find my way out?
Yeah. You know, I think it's really hard to say this is what you must do because there is no, you know, one, you must do this that will fit every situation. So it really depends, you know, where are you? You know, are you in Bukit Gasing, which is a hill and surrounded by PJ and KL all around? So you come out somewhere, at least you will come out, right? Or are you in Taman Negara where you could end up, you come out in Pahang, you started in Perak, but you come out in Pahang, right? So it's all very, very different. The main thing is, first of all, try to self-rescue. And you know what information that you've given your friends before you've put yourself into that jungle, to go into that jungle. Are they expecting you? You know, maybe there won't be. You know, maybe, let's say if I go on a hike at Bukit Gasing, maybe no one will know I'm missing until the next day when I don't show up at work, right? So only you know what are the circumstances of your hike and then figure out what you need to do to rescue yourself. Generally, the closest rescuer is the one that's in the mirror, right? Is you. The closest rescuer is yourself. So stay or go, there's so many different things to consider. You know, you could be injured, you could be in a very precarious situation with, you know, steep cliffs all around you. Then, you know, by all means, don't go, you know, stay there, you know, that's the safest place. You know, maybe you have to wait for daylight, then you can see your way out. So many, many different choices.
And sometimes you end up having to stay the night. And this is obviously, if you were planning for a day hike, you won't have the gears and the equipment for an overnight stay. What would you do? What would you advise for people who find themselves in that kind of situation?
One, you know, you asked me about equipment. One good piece of equipment always to have is just a garbage bag. Because a garbage bag is pretty lightweight. It folds up to, you know, tiny small piece. It can fit in your wallet. You know, it doesn't weigh anything. So a garbage bag, with something like a garbage bag, you can sit on it. You can make it into like a little jacket. And that makes a huge difference. If possible, you can buy one of those space blankets, you know, those silver foil blankets. They add a lot of warmth, but, you know, they give you a lot of... So those are little emergency kits that help. So in my first aid kit, which I carry wherever I go, I have a space blanket, I have a whistle, I have you know, some means to light a fire. Even though those aren't first aid things, because I know I carry the first aid kit always, so I'll always have those in my first aid kit. That's why it's a wilderness first aid kit.
Right. And we mentioned Bear Grylls earlier. How important is wilderness skills and safety for the casual hiker? I mean, we're not you. You would go to the extreme, but if you just want to have that day hike, how much skills and how much knowledge should we have about the wilderness and about surviving in the jungle before we actually embark on that sort of journey?
It's really about your mindset. Sometimes we do some survival courses for children, and I tell this story when I do a survival course. And these are based on some real survival situations. So there was this aeroplane that was flying in South America with a family on it. The aeroplane crashed. There was only one survivor, and the survivor was a 10-year-old girl. And she had a broken arm. So, you know, mayday, mayday, aeroplane crashed. Her family are all gone. There's just her broken arm. And all she had in the aeroplane was this packet of chewing gum. That was the only food that she had. So she said, okay, well, you know, aeroplane, let's wait for help. So she sat there chewing the chewing gum for a couple of days. After about 2 days, there was no rescue. So she figured, well, I'm going to have to self-rescue and rescue myself. So she figured out, she's 10 years old, so she figures out, well, let's look for a stream so I can get some water. And she follows this stream and she realizes that, you know, from the stream she has water and maybe some little fish. She follows that stream to a bigger river. And from there, you know, 2 weeks later, she finally comes to a village. And all she's had in 2 weeks is chewing this chewing gum that she's found, right, in from the aeroplane. With a broken arm, she survived. And then this is another true story of this hunter who was in the Canadian North Canada. And he was a pilot. So he had this aeroplane full of equipment. He had guns. He had, you know, food for a week. He had all this stuff, right? And he knew his aeroplane was going to crash. And before he crashed, he gave out a mayday signal. You know, mayday, mayday, I'm crashing. But I don't know where I am. You know, it's one of these lakes. I have no idea. So he landed his plane on this lake. And he was so worried that no one would know which lake, because of course in the Canada there's thousands and thousands of lakes, right? So he was like, oh my God, this is the days before GPS. And they found him 24 hours later, and guess what? He had committed suicide. And he had a gun, he had an aeroplane, he had a week of food, but he just couldn't take it. And so in those two stories, the big contrast is it's not about the equipment. It's not about the pre-knowledge. I mean, you know, 10-year-old girl, you know, it's not like she went for, you know, survival training, right, before that. But it's really your state of mind and your mental resilience. So I think what Bear Grylls teach us is not just those skills, but it's that mental preparedness, that willingness to like, hey, okay, you know, what can I do? That innovation, that thinking on your feet, and that willingness to, all right, I'm in this situation, what can I do? And be proactive in those situations.
Mm-hmm. I want to go off tangent a little bit, and I want to know your thoughts about that reality TV show, Survivor. What do you think about it? Is that an accurate depiction of survival in the wilderness?
Not at all. I don't think Survivor is. I have great fun. I like watching it. It's really fun TV, and it's in the outdoors. You know, that's the only thing. You know, that it's in the outdoors so that you can see all these bare-chested men and all of that, right? So it's always in this exotic environment, with this, you know, beautiful environment. That's as far it has any, you know, anything to do with. Of course, there's challenges. The teams have challenges, and they have to be innovative. But I think if you're with a group of people and if you really want to survive, it's not about, I'm going to say a word that may be X-rated. It's not about, it's about teamwork. And it's not about, you know, voting someone off your team or, you know, making deals with people and all of that. Your chances of surviving increase 20-fold, 100-fold when you're with a team, because you have each other to motivate each other. You have people to help you out. But, you know, you have to be committed to making that team work.
I want to talk a little bit about hiking in groups, because I think that most people, when they go out for a hike, they don't go alone. And what do you think about leadership within that group? How important is that role? And who should take up that role as the leader of the group, making decisions? And sometimes there will be conflict. Some people want to rest. Some people want to keep moving. How do you manage all of that?
Oh, yes. So outdoor leadership is a huge, you know, you can take a 3-year college degree on outdoor leadership, right? Because it's such an endless subject. I think leadership's a skill. It has to be learnt, just as you learn swimming or firelighting or, you know, all of that. And there's lots of components to leadership. You know, some of it's planning, some of it's effective communication, some of it is, you know, dealing with people, that soft skills of dealing with people, negotiating with people, right? If someone wants to rest and you want to go and, you know, it's you have to go and all of that. So there's many, many components to it. I think the difficult part about outdoor leadership is that you need a leader. Quite often what happens is that you have 10 people, they're all kind of like, wait a minute, I thought you were the leader. No, you lead. No, you make the decision. And no one wants to step up and make the decision. And sometimes the outdoor leader, you just have to make that decision and say, look, I'm going to make that decision. It may not be the right one, but nothing's happening unless a decision is being made. And I think for people, for the followers to be supportive enough to know that, okay, this leader is doing the best that they can under the circumstances, you know, we have to make a decision.
What are your thoughts about hiking solo?
It's great.
Well, for you, would you recommend it for everyone?
So a lot of things can happen when you're hiking solo. There's no safety net for you, right? You're just out there. A small thing, like you could cut your foot, that could turn the whole thing into be a simple 2-hour hike into a full day, multi-day, you know, survival thing. So you need to understand that when you're by yourself, that's it. You know, there's no help. There's no beam me up, Scotty. That's just you. So why I say it's great when you do hike solo, though, you are putting yourself more at risk. But then you have to be that much more focused and that much more aware. Everything has a consequence and that much more, focused, you know. Whereas when you're with groups, you know, you have a little bit more of a safety net.
And if you go for a hike, especially if you're a new hiker, would you recommend a supervised trip rather than to go out blind, kind of not knowing where you're going and seeing where you're ending up by the end of your hike?
Yeah, certainly. I think if you don't have a lot of skills, don't have a lot of experience, definitely there are always, you know, groups out there. You know, nowadays with the internet, it's so easy to find groups of people, like-minded people. And the main thing is when you find a group of people, go with a group of people that you feel comfortable with. The old outdoor people always say, make sure that you go out with companions that you like, because you may have to end up eating them. But, you know, when you're in the wilderness, there's just these people, right? So make sure that you do get on with them, that you have the same value system, that you're hiking for the same purposes. It doesn't make sense if some people are training for Eco Challenge and they want to do a 20-day expedition in Africa. And it's like, well, I just want to hike in Bukit Gasing, right? And so you've got very different objectives. So make sure that you have the same objectives.
Hikers who have been hiking for a while, they're probably thinking, I want to upskill, I want to learn more, I want to be a qualified, I want to be qualified with wilderness first aid, for example. Do you train?
Yes, we do. Yeah. So we have wilderness first aid courses, which are on our website, www.nomadadventure.com. And we also have some swift water rescue courses. And generally, if people kind of come to us and ask us, hey, I want to do this, that, and the other, we also do customized programs for people. So, you know, we have our set programs, and I mentioned briefly that we did some survival courses for children, and those were because, you know, we had some requests for those.
So we're almost reaching the end of our show, but this is an interesting question that my producer prepared about superstitions and the forest. What are your thoughts on that? It's a pretty touchy subject because some people are actually very superstitious about going into the forest, and they have some rituals that they have to make sure that they... Well, I think it's for peace of mind, but that's my opinion. What are your thoughts on that?
So I know after the Kinabalu incident happened, right, the earthquake Kinabalu, there was a lot of stuff on the internet sort of saying, oh, you know, these people shouldn't have done that. So I think the most important thing is that wherever we are, we need to respect the local culture. So, you know, if we are in Malaysia or in Thailand or America or whatever it is, whatever the beliefs of the people are there, we do need to respect that. And also, when we are in a jungle, even if we are Malaysian ourselves, do treat it like we are guests in someone's house. And whether the guest is, you know, a squirrel or, you know, wildlife or another kind of life on a different dimension, I think, you know, to me, those superstitions, whenever I've talked to people about them, I've always been very comfortable with them because to me, they make sense just in terms of being eco-friendly, just in terms of respecting the environment. So whether I believe or don't believe or you believe or whatever, we don't even need to have that conversation. We can just talk about respecting the environment. And generally, the practices are the same. Don't litter, be careful where you go to the bathroom. And all those are just good eco-friendly practices anyway.
Mm-hmm. What are some tips on becoming a better and more well-prepared hiker?
I think really it's going out and doing it. Just go and try it and give it a go. Understand that, you know, mistakes are part of it. You know, one day you'll go out without your raincoat and you're going to get wet. And, you know, one day you may get a bit confused for a few hours, you know, you're going around in circles. But that's just part of it. Try to make sure that you have a good parameters of safety. You know, you have some safety nets. You can do that by going out with groups, going out with more experienced people, you know, getting some information, some training. But, you know, give yourself some safety nets. But I think just really go out and try it. Because, you know, we talk about all these risks, but I think anyone who's stood on top of a mountain and seen the view on the top of the mountain, and you know that what has brought you to the top of that mountain has been your legs and your heart and the friendship of your team and the support of your team. That feeling is something that you can't, you know, money can't buy it. You can't replace it. And so it's really worth it.
Would you recommend some of the hiking trails that people can try and experience in around KL and PJ?
Yeah. Surprisingly, there's actually really good hiking trails, you know, in KL. Some just right in the city. Bukit Gasing, Bukit Kiara, even Bukit Nanas around KL Tower. That's actually quite a nice hiking trail right in the heart of the city, and it's pretty amazing. And then a bit further afield, there's areas like Hulu Langat and Gombak. There are little hiking trails there. It's really hard to get maps in Malaysia because, you know, maps are still national secrets in Malaysia. But I think, you know, things like GPS, Google Maps, You know, there's, you know, Map My Hike. There's all these different apps that you can get now. And I think information now is just so much freer. And there's a whole bunch of hiking apps that you can get. And it really relies on that, what's the word, you know, where people... where
crowdsourcing.
You know, crowdsourcing, right. Crowdsourcing all that information. And the more people we have, the more information we have to input all that data into those maps. You know, I think the days of getting lost will get will be less and less. And there's nothing like it, right? That feeling when you're in the jungle and you can hear the sound of birds and you can hear that whisper of the wind in the leaves and just that to know that you're part of the ecosystem, that nature is, you're part of it and it's part of you. That feeling is amazing.
All right. And on that note, I've been speaking to Chan Yuanli of Nomad Adventure, who dispensed some invaluable advice to trek and hike safely. If you missed any part of the interview, you can download the podcast on our BFM app available on the App Store or Google Play. I'm Tina Camellia. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.